Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. My guest for this episode is Mark Lakeman, an architect, planner, and trained permaculture practitioner from Portland, Oregon. Our conversation today is part one of two. In this discussion, we cover participatory culture and community building through action as a way to engage the social structures that are vital to the ongoing development of a better world. The ideas presented here form the basis for our second conversation, where we delve more fully into urban permaculture. Start here and then look for that next show in a few weeks. If you enjoy this interview or any other episode of the show, please help me so that I can continue making more by taking the time to make a donation. You can find out how to contribute financially by going to thepermaculturepodcast.com/support. If a financial contribution to the show isn't something that you're able to do, then would you share a bit of your time and tell others about the show? Link to your favorite episodes from your blog, or share a link on Facebook, or however it is that you get ideas to your friends, family, and other social circles. Together, we can make a difference in the world. Now then, on to Mark Lakeman. I'll join you again afterwards with some thoughts and updates. Well then, Mark, if you are ready to get this interview underway, could you give myself and the listeners a little bit of your background and biography and the work that you're currently doing?
Well, first of all, I'm based on the West Coast, and I have kind of a foundation in more conventional education and professional practice in the field of architecture and planning, which officially began in the mid-80s, but in truth, I'm part of a family of architects and planners, all of them very progressive and highly motivated to use design in the service of trying to actually literally design and create a better world. So I would say really my education, my cultural orientation began when I was a little kid. And in the foment of the 60s and 70s is when I was kind of coming into the world and being in some ways indoctrinated into the family practice of facilitating participatory practices and processes in communities. So it was a rich time. And I think because of having grown in that period of time, I have probably been able to see farther over the horizon of possibility than my own parents in seeing, for instance, how design can relate to social justice, for instance, and certainly the ecological sustainability. So that's part of my background. That's the more sort of conventional part. The unconventional part begins on the last day of my conventional practice, which included working at a large corporate office, and on that last day, there was a huge cover-up that was exposed, a big toxic waste cover-up that our firm had been participating in, and I decided to quit, and that began 7 years of traveling. I literally jumped on a plane, and I started to go to different village-scale, village-based societies around the planet, looking at how design commenced more as a process of cultural expression and participatory culture than as a professionalized practice focused on creating things or landscapes for sale or commodities, buildings as products or as investments. Instead, I wanted to see places where people were more connected and rooted to their environment and making a different set of commitments through the way that they engaged the design and creation of human places. And that led me in sort of through the back door of permaculture, I would say. I ultimately ended up in a rainforest with these so-called pre-industrial people studying their cultural practices of integrative living, in which they were already figuring out how to plant their gardens in sort of these regenerative and mutually sort of protective and supportive and energizing guilds, how they didn't draw lines between themselves, how their human environment was really more of an aggregate that reinforced a sense of place and space between their homes rather than drawing lines between each other. So I think I did about a 7-year immersion. And then after that, since the mid-90s, I've had my own practice. And it's a professional practice once again, except it's really transposing the idea of building community through everything that I do onto my practice, so that I'm really trying to facilitate the emergence, the creative emergence of other people that I work with, and not just trying to design things that I sign my name to. So inevitably, my architecture and planning became oriented towards sustainability, but with a much more strongly social focus, so that I really want people to be engaging, from the very beginning in the same kind of collaborative process that you might see professional team undertaking, but now the community is the team. So that in the end, what you have isn't so much a thing or a building, but really a shell for them to live in, which fits them perfectly and grows as they grow over time. So you've really built their identity with place as an expression of their own vision and values. So urban permaculture is really the name of the game for me now. I'm engaged in all kinds of different projects, whether it's sort of insurrections in public space where we see sort of turn intersections into public gathering places, or we transform the edges of private spaces along roadways, whether it's urban or suburban or rural, into kind of an edge that contributes more to the public realm in the way of beauty or interactivity or food. So really kind of a limitless spectrum of activist and also professional scale projects, working in many different collaborative teams in the offices of Communitecture, the nonprofit The City Repair Project, and the anarchist collective, the Planet Repair Institute. Those are my contexts for working in various different combinations of people.
Now, I have to ask, because you just used a word that, depending on who you talk to, seems to have more definitions than just about any other in a political context when referring to anarchy. Is that an American viewpoint of, as some would express it, of no government, or is it a more nuanced, perhaps, if you will, European viewpoint, where there are different perspectives on anarchy between, say, the left-leaning libertarian socialists versus, like, the anarcho-syndicates?
Sure. Well, the definition that I'm using isn't really like the popular conception of anarchy, where we pronounce our nonconformity loudly through conforming to a certain dress code, starting with black. And it's not so much about rejection, because I'm really interested in what we're creating. So our anarchist collective or collaborative is constructively focused, and it's place-based. And this is a huge difference. We're basically pronouncing ourselves villagers, and we're saying that we're self-authorizing, that we are going to undertake the things that we think need to happen, irrespective of what authorities are ready to see happen in the world. If, for instance, if there are codes that say that what we want to undertake is okay and it requires permits and that makes sense, we may or may not comply. If there are things that the bureaucracy have stated as goals and the political leadership have stated as goals, but they haven't realized what form something needs to take in order to satisfy those goals, and therefore they haven't created a code or permitting process to facilitate it, then we'll authorize ourselves to lead the way. I can tell you, I don't know if we'll even get into this enough, but over and over again here in the city of Portland, we have found that we have to break laws in order to create a model that then the political leadership can recognize meets their own established goals that they have not met yet. And they rely on us to actually break the rules so that they can readjust their own rules to open up a window for things to happen. Whether it's transforming street intersections into public squares, as we've done, that had to start illegally, but then was retroactively legalized for the whole city to do, or creating an insulation system that's based on chopped straw and then retrofitted into existing houses that previously was illegal, but now has become legal because we demonstrated its value and how it met city goals. Over and over again, we've had to break rules in order to say, look, you want to meet civic goals, you can't keep doing things the way that you've done them before. You have to do them differently. And if you've closed down all the portals of possibility toward doing things differently because your codes say that there's only one way, then you have this terrible dissonance between your goals and objectives and your daily reality. And only the community is really going to solve that problem. So over and over again, the city says, okay, what have you done now? Please kind of explain it to us so that then we can adjust the rules and make these things legal. So it's an interesting paradox. I no longer understand rules as being, you know, hard, fast lines, but more as sort of community agreements that are constantly up for renegotiation whenever the community should decide that they want to. So, yeah, I would say we're proactive. We're focused on our own power. We're not really worried so much about who thinks that they have our power or who thinks they have power over us. We're not interested in fighting about it. As a place-based community, we're able to just simply move ahead you know, most cities are based upon a complaint sort of system. So the idea being like you can't get away with anything because someone will report you. But what if everyone in the community is in on the same initiative and they all understand that taking matters into their own hands will enable them to meet their own goals? Nobody's going to report anybody because we're all just focused on getting on to the next challenge, taking it in stride. It's a kind of a different sort of definition, and as a place-based community, it doesn't have a relationship to anybody's conventional book-based definition.
Thank you for taking the time to define and elaborate on that, because it makes sense within the context that you're using it for your organization, but it also, through your explanation, opens up a lot of avenues for conversation, because you've touched on many of the issues that I run into with trying to practice permaculture, and I know that I've heard from listeners about. With that idea, I think it's Joel Salatin wrote the book, Everything I Want to Do is Illegal, and that there are all these issues that we run up against that are currently not legal, but there are no models that we can point to show how it would work, because they're not in our community. They're not something that community leaders can interact with and be able to adjust the goals. Would you be open to exploring some of that conversation as part of some of the actions that you've taken and some of the things that you've run into for other people who want to build these models but just don't know how to proceed because of the bureaucracies involved?
Sure, absolutely. Do you want to explore that now?
Yeah, let's go ahead and explore that now. What you've mentioned is a really big question a lot of people who I interact with have about just how do we do this. A lot of the paths that I've taken is about trying to change the laws before I take action, but I'm finding that when I do that, unless I sit down and actually write what the new code needs to be and submit it to someone for approval, the thought that I've put into how to handle it doesn't happen when it actually makes it to local government, and it just becomes a conversation of a yes or no, okay, what do we want to do to make this happen, without in any way reflecting on what the on-the-ground conditions are to make it possible. And just a quick example of that is we got the local rules changed to allow you to have chickens on a property. And what it turned out to be is they allowed you, if you had an acre, to have chickens. But the way that the regulations are written is that if you have a perfectly square acre, you only have like an 8-foot by 8-foot section in the middle of the property that you can put chickens on. That's provided your wellhead and all these other things are located way around the periphery. So for anybody like myself who has an oblong property, I can't keep chickens under this new ordinance, even though it was supposed to allow it for 1 acre. Anyway, that's a little long-winded, but if you could speak to some of these ideas and how you're making these models possible.
All right. Well, it's a little bit of a challenge to talk about what I think other people should or could do, and at the same time talk about my own personal approach, because not everybody is going to be able to have the same level of energy or enthusiasm as I do. But I guess speaking from my personal perspective is probably the best thing to do. I guess I would recommend a lot of what I do to people anyway, because my own practices are undertaken as intentionally as models to offer other people. Okay, well, I kind of have to have a lot of different irons in the fire so that I kind of am keeping things going and I never end up getting stopped or frustrated. So I operate in a kind of multiple scales and levels at the same time. Of course, it's always easy to be doing the things that you can do without having to negotiate or fight. So kind of, you know, whatever it is that you feel that you want to plant on the land that you have available to you. Say you want to do something that affects public space, you always have the edge of your private space available to you. Because after all, the best public spaces are the ones that are animated by interesting activities along private edges, whether it's a cafe or a garden. The most vibrant piazzas, for instance, are animated by private edges. If you have any kind of site control, you're always able to initiate something to happen along your own edge that can be even delightful or surprising or shocking, can call attention, can provide a model. So I always have lots of things going on that are just out of my own initiative. That keeps my momentum and enthusiasm high. There's also things that I like to do that are a surprise or a gift that is another kind of layer of self-authorization. For instance, I might laminate images or poems something delightful. Sometimes I laminate hundreds or thousands of these, and I attach these little cards to a fishing swivel. On one side, there's maybe some salvage aluminum foil, and on the other side, a poem. And I'll laminate that onto a piece of cardboard and attach it to a string and hang it from a tree during winter, so I effectively create this spinning reflective leaf effect. And as people walk up and down this street corridor, just utterly charmed by all these spinning reflective sort of poem leaves, I've basically subverted public space in a way that, you know, I haven't asked permission to do it. In fact, I usually do it with my neighbors so that everybody's already in on it. But everyone who travels through the space is just completely shocked, and there's not a transportation official in the land who will be upset about this, you know, or even an arborist. They'll just be utterly charmed and delighted, and they'll stop, they get off their bike or out of their car, and they'll walk up and read the poem. It's kind of like spreading seed balls, you know, just kind of tossing them here or there, except in this case, it's sort of messing with trees and sort of putting a message out there that is designed to just sort of suggest that the world could be a different place than people have ever seen before. So whether it's that, or maybe baking a couple hundred cookies, putting them on little plates, and just spreading them around the neighborhood with little messages or poems or haiku or something, you know, that just sort of say that there are people out there who want to weave magic in the world. So I like to do things that just go out right to people's doors, out into public space, where I just do something in that space to help remind people that, after all, it is a commons. It's not just a corridor for movement of goods and services or for the storage of cars. It's really supposed to be a social space that our houses, you know, kind of look upon and that are supposed to be animating. We're not supposed to just move through it and then withdraw into our separate boxes. We're supposed to be out in the streets together. So I like to do things with other people out there. Sometimes we collaborate to design what we're going to do, and sometimes a few of us just design the delight of others, and we do some stuff in the dead of night to delight and surprise other people without their permission. It's sort of like a suggestion, and it can be taken away, it could be destroyed, it could be vandalized, but we put it out there and we let it go. So it's usually ephemeral. Sometimes it could be food-based. I'm basically talking about that's the same sort of idea as sharing the abundance that comes from your garden. You've got way too many tomatoes, so maybe you just make some packages and you take them around to your neighbors and you leave them on the doorstep with or without a note. So you're just sharing abundance, and it's that same impulse. It's extremely primal and absolutely necessary for any functional culture for people to just spontaneously express their sense of affection and connection with each other outwardly like that. To share surplus, to share emotion. It's evidence of health. So I like to do that. I also like to sort of selectively focus on certain rules that I think need to change. I am not currently focused on too many of these. I'm mostly assisting other people in doing it, like subverting public space, taking the street and turning it into a public square, that sort of thing. Those sorts of initiatives are very important, and if there's some sort of legal limitation to something that you feel must be undertaken, then you can start to form a proposal and gather people around together, take it into the political context, the bureaucratic context, and offer this and champion it and try to move it ahead. Whether it's transforming a derelict piece of land in your own neighborhood to become a public garden or any other sort of initiative, I do like to be working on larger scales like that. Sometimes on a policy level to change a rule for the entire city. So I like to operate at various different scales, always doing things directly, though, with my own hands, enjoying the fruit of my labor with other people that I live among. So always trying to make it a socially based process where, in every case, we're always getting to sit down and have drinks and food together. So we're really building community at the same time as we're trying to change the world. We're trying to build friendships and educate children, that mentor children, you know, stack a lot of different outcomes into the same sort of initiative over and over and over again. A lot of the same outcomes accomplished even at different scales.
And by engaging community and developing these relationships with other people, it makes the process of engaging in public space that much easier to kind of take over some of these places and do these things without asking?
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons to do it. For one thing, I think it's really important as activists to not just always be working toward the world we want to live in, but even more importantly, to be inhabiting it right now. Like, it's here. You know, you can say, world peace is here at this table with us now. You don't even have to say it. You can just decide that that's what you're about. So, you know, I'll be undertaking initiative to put in a big food forest in a community, but I'm determined that the culture I'm wanting to attain is the culture that is working toward these things. So when I sit with other people and I enjoy that time of sharing food and having conversation, it's not just a break in between our activism. It's actually the point of all the activism, is to actually have those moments of sitting together, not just always being a frantic society of, you know, 9-to-5, work-oriented, puritanical by nature, but more that actually having the right and having the time, having carved out a niche in our day for each other is really the culture that we're seeking the whole time anyway. And besides, our whole project, you know, the only thing that lasts anyway is the cultural impulse. Everybody dies. Things are made and unmade. So the one thing that can last, that can help humanity endure, is the fact that generation by generation we somehow proceed. So when we try to build our cultural capacity, build our cultural vision, change our behavioral patterns in a way that is pervasive so that everyone is affected and they make new choices where they value each other and they're feeling more connected to the earth and to a more cyclical perspective of living in time and all of these sorts of things, you know, then we've actually shifted our cultural perspective and our cultural behavior. It's really a social project to me. You know, designing and implementing a food forest is the means to bring people together and change them. I think the problem of our society are the choices that we're making, or it's the idea that somehow we've come to believe that we don't have power to make appropriate choices. So by doing these local projects, whether they're small or large, it helps give people the practice of their self-empowerment and of actually listening and speaking and collaborating. And that's the culture that we're trying to build of those behavioral patterns. If we can instill those pervasively and deeply enough, you know, against all odds, against the media, against the sort of political confusion, if we can instill those values and practices, then we'll persist. And if we don't, all the things we make, gray water systems and agricultural systems in the urban environment, will all be unmade unless we somehow change our people. So that's why it's really a social project to me.
The last series of interviews that I've done leading up to this conversation with you have been discussions about moving beyond that physical and engaging more socially, and the way is that, well, as you say, that the food forest is kind of really just a technique for doing these other things, the importance of interacting with people. And have you ever read the article 8 Forms of Capital by Ethan Rowland and Gregory Landwa?
I don't think so.
When you mention about money and the financial, one of the things that always gets me is how much dollars are the only thing that makes sense in many conversations for people, and that feeling that, well, if I don't have money, I don't have power. And some of that article and the thoughts within it are addressing all the other ways that we're connected with people and can influence really everything between our knowledge, the connections that we have with other people.
I'm just thinking about how important it is to have perspective. Vandana Shiva in Chicago recently was asked some question about how to have the resources and the means to undertake the changing of the world. And she said, look, if we couldn't talk and we didn't have thumbs, I don't think we could do it. But she said, now that we have language and we've developed thumbs, really nothing is beyond us. And she said, really, just have some perspective about this. You have all of the capability. You have, you know, all of your senses to be able to engage your context. You can communicate with people. You can ask for help. You can offer to help. You can educate yourself. And you have at least, you know, 8 to 16 hours a day of waking time. Everybody's in on it, whether they think that they're before you or against you. We're all ultimately on the same side. The conditions are absolutely ripe for us to be able to do anything we need to do, money or no money. In fact, she said, you know, money is in many ways the problem. It's more of a limitation than it is an enabler. So she said, really, there is nothing that can stop you. It's really only a question of perspective. And I think that she's absolutely right about that.
Shall we end with that thought and pick up afterwards?
And that was Mark Lakeman. What I like about this conversation is that idea of building culture and community through action, that we're going out and engaging others, pushing the lines of what is possible, and bringing more delight and joy into the world in a way that's nonviolent and inclusive, that use of the public corridor where everyone wanders, as a space to reach others. Though I don't touch on politics in this show, and have no intention to, generally speaking, the more that I talk with people, the less I see what divides us as individuals and even groups. I think that if we focus on what we can do to make our own space better, and on sharing that with others, so we can find what we have in common, the world in turn becomes a more peaceful, bountiful place to live. Together we can find abundance rather than scarcity, joy rather than fear. Won't you join me in seeing that happen? Whatever you're doing or where you find your personal road at this time, I'd like to hear from you. Together we can help each other do incredible things. So email me, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com, or give me a call, 717-827-6266. While you're at it, take a few minutes and join in the discussions on Facebook, facebook.com/thepermaculturepodcast, or on Twitter, where I am @permaculturecst. Next week, on November 26th, Ethan Hughes joins me again for another talk about his life and the work at the Possibility Alliance. Then, after months of waiting, Jack Spearco of the Survival Podcast will be my guest on December 3rd. And the second part of the conversation with Mark Lakeman will be out on December 10th. And, of course, expect other topical shows and other pieces in between. Until the next time, take care of the Earth, yourself, and each other. And the Legal. The Permaculture Podcast is released under Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivatives, Non-Commercial License. Feel free to share it. Just tell people where you got it from, and don't change or sell it.